the outlier gentleman. Oh, yes, hello.
Welcome to my life. It's so fucking awful and stuff.
Put on your spontaneous hat. And also your spontaneous shorts.
Promiseapparel.com.
And we only had like fucking 3 butlers when I wanted 4.
Just gonna hold fast forward and gyrate. Disgusting. Also, continue.
Anyway, speaking of death, Eric, I have recently started Death Note, the anime series. The anime series. Man, I really feel like this came out in 2007? Has it really been that long?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I remember going to see the live action movies in the theater. Like, it was like special edition, like one time showing, because they made like a 2-part live action film for Death Note, and then they did like a prequel for L. That they showed down off of, you know, the main road by the highway where we live in our nondescript city.
Somewhere in America.
Somewhere in the Midwest. But yeah, dude, Death Note's been my shit for a long time.
But I started watching it, and I told you that I was going to start watching it. And then I was going to watch like an episode or two of it. And then if I hated it, no big loss. The episodes are only like 20 minutes long. So I got through episode 1 and I was immediately hooked into it.
Tell me more about that. Like, what hooked you?
The whole like God complex that Light goes through. Like when, you know, he first meets Ryuk and like Ryuk tells him about like what the Death Note's all about. And he's skeptical at first. He's like, yeah, you're feeding me a line. And then he's like, fuck it, I'm just, you know, he's watching the news one day and he hears about this guy that barricaded himself in a school and he writes the guy's name and all of a sudden they're like, yeah, he just collapsed. He had a heart attack. And then immediately, like, the light switch turns on and Light's like, I am now the god of death. People live and die by my hand. And I'm like, wow.
It's not like a slow burn, but like you can, they immediately establish that you're not supposed to like
Light. Yeah.
But you end up still kind of liking him, which I thought was very like devious. I like that shit.
Bitches is devious. But
you Japanese is super devious. Hate you, motherfucker.
Well, and the thing is like you watch it and like you kind of, what's kind of cool about it is like, you know, we've talked about that, like, with Joker, where it's, like, turning the camera around kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
And it really kind of makes you contemplate, like, if you had that kind of power,
what would you do?
What would you do? Would you use it? Or would you just be like, fuck this, I don't want it? Because that's, like, a big thing. You write somebody's name in there, they die, period.
I like, in the beginning, when I first started watching it, you know, for me, it kind of, like, it felt different from the usual anime. Because, like, you know, we ended season 3. Season 4 premiere, everybody.
Hey, everybody.
How do you feel about that shit?
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
You're not tired of it yet?
Oh, hell no.
Okay, good. You're not sick of me yet? Don't fucking leave me.
As I embrace Eric in my arms.
Just pull out a gun. Like, don't fucking leave. Don't leave the show. I liked how Light, it was so easy for him to justify what he was doing.
Right.
And I liked how they would show, like, the worship of the idea of Kira.
Yeah. I am justice.
Yes.
I am justice is all he keeps saying. I am justice.
It's one of the few shows I can, like, recall a lot of it from memory.
Yeah.
Like, it stuck with me a lot.
Well, my favorite character from that show is L. L is great. Because L is just very, you know, they build L up to be this, you know, this genius, and he is. But then when you meet him, L's kind of, I don't want to call him, like, lazy, but, like, L's is kind of very blasé about a lot. You know, they're having these big, heavy conversations amongst each other, and there's L just with a little fork, and he's eating cake. You know, he's obsessed with fucking cake. You're gonna eat that cake? Cake makes you fat. I'm not eating that. Well, I don't care. And then he just kind of grabs it, and he starts eating it. He's just, he, aloof would probably be, like, the biggest way to describe L.
Savant.
Yeah, savant. Very aloof. But, you know, you and I were talking about this before the show, and one of the big things I like with him is that he's very, the way he, like, confronts Light. And, like, Light is, like, in this big panic, and, like, he'll, like, spout, like, a whole bunch of stuff at L, and L will just kind of be like, okay, moving on. You know, I think you're Kira. And then all of a sudden, Light will go on this big diatribe for, like, 2 minutes. And L will just kind of look at him and go, all right, well, I just thought I'd run it past you. You might be him, you might not. I don't know yet. I still got to look into it. It's just very, it's almost like passive-aggressive, the way he acts towards Light. But through the show, you can tell that L does, you know, L does tell him that he's a friend. I'm not going to spoil anything, but, like, there is kind of a kinship that does kind of form between Light and L.
Yeah, the rivalry becomes, like, a respect.
Yeah.
Which I always dug.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that was one of the best parts of the show for me was, like, well, the dramatic camera work and, like, rising of the music aside.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to explain my meticulous plan while showing you how I'm going to draw these potato chips without, you know, giving way to the camera that I'm actually the bad guy this entire time while this fucking orchestral wave of music is, like, hitting. I love that shit to death. It was hilarious to me, but, like, over time, I really grew to, like, appreciate the writing of this sort of, like, this weird, like, coiling of, like, fucking trickery that they're trying to pull on each other throughout those first, like, 10, 15 episodes.
Right. And the thing is what's funny is that Light, you know, develops a god complex. Like, he considers himself a god.
Oh, yeah.
And he always thinks that he's going to be more clever than everybody else. And he goes through this big, elaborate plot in his head. And it's almost as if L can see inside of his head and just kind of takes the conversation and conceptualizes it in his own way. And just kind of watching the shock on Light's face when L basically almost word for word says what L is, or what Light is thinking in his head.
Yeah.
It's just, it's very cool to see the tete-a-tete between the two of them. But right now, I'm almost to the end. And there were a couple episodes where I was like, this is kind of, you're losing me a bit.
Meandering a little?
Yeah, it was meandering a bit. But it's got me back. The only thing that I wouldn't necessarily call it a criticism, but like the whole, I'm going to give my death note to Misa, who's going to give it to this guy, who's going to give it to this guy, who's going to, like, these big Z patterns that they go in sometimes.
Yeah, the serpentine, like, shit is weird.
Yeah, it's like, it's super fucking strange. That's the only thing, because, like, in the beginning, you know, one of the things where he's like, I'm going to give my death note to Misa. Misa, you give it to, what was her Shinigami's name?
Oh, the white one. I can't think of
her name. It was the purple-haired one.
I can't think.
Rem.
Rem, thank you. Rem.
You're going to give your death note to Rem, and then Misa, you give yours to me, and that way if they question us about, you know, our death notes, we won't remember.
I always kind of liked that, though, because I felt like that shined a light on Light's mania.
Right. But, like, that was fine. But, like, the current arc I'm on, where there were three Death Notes floating around.
Okay.
Where it's like, yeah, I'm going to take this one, and Misa, you're going to take this one, and then you're going to send this one here, and it's going to go there, and it's going to go there. It's like, whoa. You guys need to slow down a bit. Because now you're starting to... You're starting to... damn it, I was going to... I had a metaphor. Lose the narrative. Thank you. There it is.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, me.
Thank you, me. You're starting to lose sight of the narrative. Like, you're making it too hard to follow at this point.
Do you feel like there were, like, holes? Or do you feel like it wrapped up nicely, but, like, in kind of, like, a drawn-out, overly drawn-out Guns of the Patriots kind of way?
No, they tied everything together. Like, I think they did a... I think they're doing a good job, like, putting a bow on everything.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, it's like Guns of the Patriots. It's very... You know, you could have done all this in, like, an episode, and you stretch it out over five. Because, like, right now, I'm at the part where the prosecutor has one of the death notes.
Okay.
The guy that goes, delete, delete.
Yes.
All I can think of every single time he was doing that, I'm thinking Matt Hardy in my head going,
There were times when I was watching Matt Hardy on, like, Impact Wrestling. When he was, like, full Hillbilly Beethoven. And I was like... Did he get that from the Death Note?
Brother Nero, I knew you would come. Oh, man. I remember, like, you and I would send gifs back to each other, and we would refer to each other as Brother Nero for, like, a good solid 6 months. Brother Nero. But it's a solid show. I think this has become my favorite anime.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It's solid because the characters are, like, you may not agree with Light, but, like, you wouldn't know unless you're put in his position.
Yeah.
And Light's kind of a sociopath. Because he doesn't really, like, in the beginning, even before he gets the Death Note, Light's just kind of very tunnel vision. This is what I want to do. I want to focus on my academics. Don't really give a shit about my family. Sure, I'll hang out with them. Cool, whatever.
Very much so.
Yeah. And then, like, even during the show, even when he's in the relationship with Misa, Misa's head over heels in love with him. And she, like, anything Light tells her to do, she will do without question. There is no questioning her allegiance or loyalty. They even, you know, it's funny. Sorry, I hit like a rough patch in my throat. Even when Elle asked Misa, like, what do you think? What would you think if Light was Kira and he's killing all these people? And she goes, I'd probably support him even more than I already do. Unquestioningly loves Light. Airhead, she's an airhead, but just unquestioningly, unequivocally loves Light. Light does not feel any emotion for her.
Yeah.
She is a pawn. And, like, he definitely uses her emotions against her, even in the infancy of their relationship. Because Rem tries talking her out of... I forget who they were talking about killing. I want to say it was Elle. And... Light looks at her and he's like, you know, if you love me, you'll do this.
I remember that.
Yeah, and she turns to Rem and she's like, I need to do this. And then when she starts wavering, Light walks up to her and kisses her. Not out of passion. The kiss is not emotional to him in any way. It's a tool. And as soon as Rem sees that, she goes, okay, I'll do it. But I'll tell you this right now, you fuck her over, I'm coming for you. And if a demon says, your ass is next if something happens, I'm sorry, but I'm shitting my pants immediately at that moment.
I think that was my biggest takeaway from, like, Ryuk was, like, he was, upstairs you were talking about him kind of not really being, like, an afterthought, but, like, sort of just, like, waiting in the wings, like, sort of on the sidelines.
Yeah.
I always liked how he would just be like, hey, don't forget, after all this shit's done, you're fucking dead. And Light's like, I know. But, like, that just watching that kind of carry over that entire, was like, 40-episode fucking thing was really cool to see. Like, he was always just sort of, like, on his shoulder, just sort of fascinated by, yeah, like, wow, you're really
crazy.
You're a crazy motherfucker. Yeah. This is going to be fun to watch.
Oh, by the way, bring me an apple. And that's one of the things that I really enjoyed that they did with Ryuk, is that Rem was kind of serious and, you know, this is a bad idea, Misa, you don't want to do that. You know, and she always would, like, put up this facade, like, I don't care about Misa. She's another human. Humans are dispensable. But you can tell she truly cares for Misa. Ryuk is more, you know, me being, like, an old school D&D player, Ryuk is your chaotic evil. Mm-hmm. Ryuk is definitely the guy that's, like, I'm going to throw a grenade in the middle of the room and just see what the fuck happens. He talks to Light because he's fascinated by Light because of how psychotic he is and how chaotic Light himself is. Light enjoys that. But, like, most of the time, if something happens where, you know, he's talking to L or something and L, like, sees a crack in the armor, Ryuk's not like, oh shit, man, this is what you should say next. All Ryuk does is just chuckle. He thinks it's fucking hilarious.
Yeah, he don't help at all.
No, he doesn't help at all. He just fucking chuckles. He'll chuckle and he'll say, well, he got you there. Not, oh shit, this is what you need to do next. Like I said, with Misa and Rem, if Misa fucks up, Rem goes, that's not a good idea. Don't do that.
I'm trying to remember. I could be wrong. It's funny because, like, I was like, I'm trying to, like, as you're telling me, like, your favorite parts of the show, I'm trying to, like, remember what I was doing watching it. I think when I started watching Death Note, I already moved from Chicago here, and I started watching it, like, I was kind of obsessed with it. So I think the moment that you're talking about when he kind of uses her, that's when I think he convinces her to give up half her lifespan for the eyes, right?
She had already done so.
She had already done so, okay.
Yeah, she had already got the... She had already had the Shinigami eyes before he and her had met. Because, if you remember, Rem tells Misa the story of Jealous, the Shinigami. You remember that?
I think so.
Yeah, where she talks about she's this pretty girl and this guy's obsessed with her and Jealous was infatuated with this girl. And Jealous saves her life, but in turn sacrifices his own and adds it to her lifespan. Misa was the girl he saved. So when she halved her life, all she did was took what she got from Jealous and halved that. That's why she was able to do it, because it really didn't penalize her at all.
A lot of rules in that fucking lore, ain't it?
But and you can tell that I actually have interest in the show because I'm remembering shit like that.
I knew you would like this show because I, like, just getting to know you and, like, watching you, like, break down Ace Attorney to us and all that shit. I was like, dude, you should really get into fucking Death Note.
Here's the thing. And, like, this is what, you know, I try and tell people. Like, I like, and I know I brought it up in the past to you on the podcast, you know, in various aspects of my life, but I like nuance. I like subtlety, and I like good writing. And the Death Note is not, like, overly in your face with shit. It's very nuanced with how they do a lot of stuff where it's like, you know, the killing of the criminals. And, like, Kira only kills criminals. He doesn't kill anybody else. He kills bad people. And then all of a sudden, the Death Note goes to, what was it called? It was like Shibota. The Industries, the corporation where they were starting to kill, like, senators and shit.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like, what I liked about the nuance there, the subtlety there, is, like, people with that kind of responsibility, or, like, people like Misa, people with that kind of responsibility will kill depending on their own mindset of what they feel is wrong. When Light gets it, he's like, I'm going to make a peaceful world. I'm going to kill all criminals. And any criminals that are left over, they're going to be too scared to do anything. Because I'm always going to be watching.
Which, on paper, sounds
kind of... Sounds great.
Sounds kind of noble. Sounds kind of noble, but, like, you know, at a certain point, once all the machinations and shit start to, like, unravel, you're like, okay, yeah, this is... It's too much. It's too easy to become corrupted.
Well, I mean, and that's the thing. As you hear, you know, the more and more Light goes through it, Light becomes completely corrupt. It is his sense of justice, and anybody that gets in my way is going to die. Period.
Which makes for an excellent fucking villain.
Right.
Because he believes he's in the right.
Well, the thing is that, do you call Light a villain?
Yeah.
Or do you call him an anti-hero?
No, he's totally a fucking villain. Okay. From the beginning.
But here's the thing. That's a matter of perspective.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, and that's another thing I like about it, is, like, people call, like, people like Victor Freeze a villain. In some people's opinion, Victor Freeze would be like an anti-hero. Because Victor Freeze, he thinks in his mind what he's doing is okay.
Just trying to bring his wife back.
He's just trying to get his wife back. And he will do anything to do so. That's what I like about it. It's like, it allows you to have perspective on stuff like that. Because to what Light is doing, he thinks he's creating the perfect society. It's almost like an Ozymandias thing in The Watchmen.
Yeah.
How many people, or like John Travolta in Swordfish. If I could save a million people, but I kill one innocent child, you have to kill one innocent child, do you do it? And then Hugh Jackman comes back and he says, what about 100? He goes, now you're thinking. What about 1,000? Like, these people in that mindset think that they're doing what's right, and I hate to quote Hot Fuzz, but for the greater good. I don't know if you've ever seen that. Have you ever seen Hot Fuzz? Okay. Yeah. Where they talk about the greater good. These people think that they're killing this small microcosm of people that don't matter to affect society as a whole. Like, that's some deep shit. And how they wrote this story is great. Because not only does it show, like, the conflict between Light and L and Misa and all these people, but as the show goes on, you start getting these detractors that are like, Kisa is doing amazing work. Crime has never been lower. Organized crime is no longer a thing.
It's a utopia.
Yeah, it's a utopia. And then there's the other side of society that goes, no, it's dystopian. Now we have to worry about, you know, they show the one scene, the guy gets arrested for a petty crime, and the guy's like, I can't fill out your report unless you give me his name, or give me your name. And he goes, please, I don't want to give you my name. Kira will kill me. Now it's fear. So are you living in happiness, or are you living in fear Because anything you do wrong, this vengeful god may strike you dead at any point.
And, like, even, like, when you get closer to the end of the city, like, end of the series, the city changes.
Yeah.
Like, what episode are you on?
33.
Okay, so, like...
And there's 37 episodes.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but that city gets pretty fucking dead and lifeless, don't it?
Yeah. Nobody goes out. Nobody goes out. They have one scene where the rioters are trying to break into the TV network because they support Kira. And then you have some of the crowd that's like, we need to stop this. And the other part of the crowd is like, no, Kira's doing great things. And then that's when they shower. That's when Nier shows up. And Nier showers like $10 million on everybody to kind of disperse the crowd and wait for the cops to show up. So Nier can get out of the building. But, no, that's it. It wasn't the TV studio. It was the place where Nier was hiding. They were trying to get to Nier and kill him. Because Light doesn't know his name or his face. He just knows him by Nier. But I won't include Nier's involvement in this because it's going to spoil stuff. But
I mean, you could probably spoil it. It's like, the shit came out in 07, but all right. It's up to you.
Well, I will say I was disappointed. Spoilers, everybody.
Fuck, spoilers.
I was disappointed that they killed L. I honest to God thought when L had collapsed, I thought he was faking. And then all of a sudden at the end, he was going to come back and be like, I told you, Light. And then that would be like the end of the show. But it was sad when L died. It was sad when Light's dad died. But, like, Light's dad is how I think everybody else in society would react. Because he does the Shinigami eye trick, and then Light tells him, okay, as soon as you see Mello, you'll be able to see his true name, write his name down, and kill him. And Light's dad goes, when he's in the hospital dying, he goes, I couldn't do it. I couldn't take his life. For somebody like you or I, to be honest, if I had a Death Note, I would not use it.
No.
That's too much.
Yeah, especially now.
Yeah.
I got shit that I gotta kind of be alive for.
Yeah.
I can't fuck around with that shit.
Yeah, it's too much.
When I was Light's age, you think about it like, yeah, I would totally fucking do that shit.
Well, like, and there's one point in the series, I think, what is it, 4 years pass?
Yeah.
And, like, Light and Misa are married and, you know, they live in Japan and, you know, Light kind of backs off for a little bit and then all of a sudden he's like, yeah, everybody's dying again. But, I don't know. But like I said, Death Note, if you haven't already checked it out, it's on Netflix. They have the full freaking series on there. Check it out. It's freaking great.
I would say if you can, if you want an alternate, like, multiverse where L wins, watch the Japanese live action movies. They're actually pretty good. Like, the guy who plays L is like, he must have like studied that show, like the way he sits, the way he speaks.
Man, you know, I watched that and I'm like, I watch how L sits and I'm like, man, I'd be able to sit for that for like maybe 15 seconds with my fat ass and my knees would give out.
You gotta be like 90 pounds to sit like that, dude. I can't do that shit. But I would say, watch the Japanese live actions. Do not watch the American Netflix live action, because that might make you want to punch walls.
I'm gonna do it just because...
We should watch it together.
I think we'll save that for a future Outlier episode.
I think so.
It's only 100 minutes long, so it's only an hour and 40 minutes.
It's going to feel like a fucking lifetime.
Are you serious? It's that bad?
Bro, it's bad. Like, if you really, like, want me to give you, like, sort of a breakdown to
prep you. Give it to me.
So think about Cowboy Bebop, how it was rebooted to be, like, this weird Robert Rodriguez, like, vulgar, like, jaunt. They try to take Death Note and somehow work it as a Donnie Darko 80s romance, but with a Willem Dafoe demon. Go. Look at your face.
I read something today that says that they don't have Misa in this one.
Okay, so Misa is like Americanized into Margaret Qualley, who was in Death Stranding and Leftovers. She's supposed to be Misa, technically. But it's like Michelle or some bullshit like that.
Okay. Is she a pop star?
No.
Does she have the cute pigtails?
No. She's just Margaret Qualley trying to be Margaret Qualley.
Margaret Qualley was mother in Death Stranding, right?
Yeah, she was mama.
I mean, she's cute. But...
You know, you gotta start somewhere as far as acting, right?
Yeah, but you gotta have, like... If you're gonna have Lisa...
You gotta have morals. Don't be in this fucking shitty reboots.
You gotta have, like, a cute little blonde and pigtails.
They do that in the Japanese version.
Do they?
Yeah, they do Misa, right?
I was gonna say, you gotta have a cute little blonde and pigtails. For Light, you gotta have... The guy that they recruited for... Or that they had play Light looked like the right part from his headshots. I don't know how he looks in the movie.
You mean in the American?
Yeah.
No.
No?
No. It was bad. The other thing, I respect that they got Darius from Atlanta, Lakeith Stanfield, to play L. He tries so hard to make that movie decent.
Yeah, but you told me, like, at one point he, like, bursts into their fucking house or something like that.
It's so fucking bad. Like, he's like, you're L. You're Akira. I know you're Akira right now. You need to tell me. Admit right now that you're Kira. And he's like, why are you yelling? And they're like, they're in a kitchen. What the fuck is going on? Like, you're L. You're supposed to be relaxed.
Right.
What are you doing?
Super chill. Like, even the first time he meets Light, he just fucking sits right next to Light. He looks in his eyes and he goes, what if I told you I'm L? Doesn't raise his voice, speaks in just a very even tone. I'm L. Just to fuck with Light. It's not to fucking reveal anything to Light. It's to fuck with him. And that's the way he always talks to Light. Doesn't matter if he's confronting him.
Some of the best moments on the show. Yeah. Like when they were handcuffed.
Yeah, when they're fighting in the fucking hotel room.
That was some of the best.
L never raises his voice. The only time he, like, screams or, like, raises the volume of his voice is when he finds out that Shinigami may actually exist. He kind of screams and falls over. That's the highest you hear his fucking volume go up, and that's it.
As much as I love Darius, he don't do... Like, the one scene that they recreate for the American version is, like, you know, revealing the region that Kira could be in. That's like the closest that they come to. It's the same thing where, like, they start by taking stuff from the show and adapting that, and then they just go off into this weird fucking direction. We're gonna do our shit now, which is like, let's have some Donnie Darko music montage. Like, no, that's the wrong fucking decade, my guy. What are we doing?
Well, do you want to hear something that's probably gonna make you angry?
Tell me.
They have a sequel in development right now.
For Death Note? On Netflix? Shit. People actually liked it?
I just read it today. No, it is. Negative reviews on fucking Rotten Tomatoes. It's sitting at 38.
38? And they're gonna make a sequel?
Yep.
It's gonna be called Death Note 2. We're not sorry.
Pretty much.
Hate watch me.
But there again, I mean, the only thing is with that is that you and I both know. We can't go off of critics, what they say.
No.
Because Venom, when it originally came out, had a low critic score.
I love
critics hated that
movie. I love that fucking movie. I don't care.
And I told you that, and you went to go see fucking Venom with your wife, and like you called me, and you're like, critics can suck my dick. That movie was amazing.
Yeah, dude, I there's a certain way that you can do like dumb popcorn movies, and like Venom and the sequel did it. In my opinion, they did it right. So, fuck them.
Well, what was it? Riz Ahmed was the villain in Venom 1?
Yes.
I thought he was great. Malicious. He was another one that was just like real callous. real callous. Like
Riz is good. Like I watched him that movie I was telling you about, the Sound of Metal.
Yeah.
Where he's the drummer that like goes deaf. Dude's fucking acting his ass off.
Yeah.
I liked him.
Yeah, but he's like real callous, like, this is for science. Like this needs to work. You know, almost like an obsessive like Enigma and like Batman Forever. I know the Schumacher fucking Batman movies live in infamy forever.
What have we got for him, Johnny?
Stigley. what I can say though is with those, Jim Carrey did a pretty good job as Riddler.
He was going off.
Yeah, where he was like real over the top and real fucking goofy and just kind of dumb, you know. And that's the whole thing is like, that's what I'm hoping they do in the Batman, is that Riddler always has to be the smartest guy in the room. He doesn't care how many fucking... He doesn't give a shit if he's giving a commencement speech at MIT. He has to be the smartest guy there, period.
Dude, I'm really... And I alluded to this before because I was hoping that before we watch The Batman.
The Batman.
The Batman. I was hoping that we'd watch There'll Be Blood so you could see Paul Dano like firing on all cylinders, because there's a scene he does with fucking Daniel Day-Lewis in the church that is intense.
Don't tell me he steals the scene from Daniel Day-Lewis.
He was trying.
Oh, I was going to say, because that's a heady fucking task right there.
So when I found out that he was playing the Riddler, I was like, this is not going to be a funny Riddler. This is going to be like deadly fucking serious. So I'm very curious to see how that plays out.
So are we still going to do like the conventional riddles? Like, I have a head, I have a tail, but have no body. What am I kind of thing?
I don't know, because when you watch the trailers, I feel like, and we talked about this too, because, well, you played Batman Telltale, I did not.
Yes.
But it feels like there's a secret within the Wayne family that Bruce does not know, but the Riddler does. I don't know if it has to do with the city, or with the mob, or with how the Wayne's got the power, but he's looking at Alfred in the trailer, he's like, you lied to me, Alfred. So I'm like, what does that mean? And I feel like they dropped that on purpose, because you're going to expect something, and then you're going to twist it.
Well, in the Telltale games... What they end up revealing in the Telltale games is that the Cobblepots were a once very affluent family, and Thomas Wayne had Oswald's mother institutionalized at Arkham, and he basically gaslit and drugged her to the point where the Cobblepots lost all credibility and lost all their money.
See. Colin Farrell as Penguin in this movie, I bet money they're going to do that.
And if they do that, like, how they did it in the Telltale game was pretty brilliant. Because, like, you know, you go through the game and, like, Oswald keeps telling Bruce, like, your dad was a dick, basically.
I got pictures.
Well, in the games, he's British. I don't know if he's supposed to be British.
Hey, man, I grew up watching Burgess Meredith.
Right, so and Danny DeVito, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, it, and he goes through the entire game defending his dad. No, Thomas Wayne did a lot for Gotham. You know, he built hospitals and businesses and...
He was the Light Yagami of fucking Gotham, dude.
And all of a sudden this video surfaces where it proves what Oswald was talking about, where he's fucking... You know, she becomes lucid and coherent, and all of a sudden he's just like, night, night time, and he's like fucking pushing, you know, psychotics into her fucking system.
That's gangster shit.
But.
I guess I do like that idea of, because when you read like the previews and stuff, they're talking about how Pattinson is playing much younger Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
He's like taking out all his anger on the criminals. Like, he's like, they show a scene that I thought was really fucking cool, like, with all the Nirvana shit and everything else going on, and like, yeah. There's a moment when Batman is fucking beating the shit out of somebody.
Yep.
And Catwoman's, like, backing away, like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
And I was like, there, now you got me.
Yeah, because that's all, you know, that's young Batman where he's taking all the, that's before, like, your Ra's al Ghul's, you know, and Ra's al Ghul ends up becoming a villain, but Ra's al Ghul is like, you know, you can't You're not going around just fucking murdering people, because then you're the scum of Gotham just like everything else. You gotta learn restraint. Like, this is just raw, real Batman, where he's just fucking just fuck with me, and I'm just gonna beat the ever-living shit out of you, and if you live, cool. If you don't, I don't give a fuck either way.
Which I feel like, you know, if that's what they're gonna go for, like, going from kind of older, grizzled Batfleck to, like, super young, like, near... Bless you.
Thank you.
Near psychotic, like, young Batman that, like, he doesn't seem, like, in control half the time. I'm like... Like, year one Batman was, like, the actual comic. They don't really highlight that too much, but they, like, hint at it. If they really go full bore with that here, where, like, he, like, loses his shit, I'm down with that.
Money.
Yeah.
Money.
Now, that you can do with Batman. Not with Superman. You can do that with Batman.
No, you can do that with Batman. And, like, I just... I hope that the Batman doesn't go the Gotham route. And it's just like, here is a fucking orgy of villains descending upon this movie at the same time.
You're right, I still maintain. We talked about this when that shit came out. How much better would that show have been if it was season one, Jim Gordon just being a cop. Season two, Penguin, like The Sopranos, but with the Penguin.
Yep.
Season three, like, over years and years, more villain shit happens, but it's got to be a slow build.
Well, like, look what they did with the Nolan Batman movies. First Batman movie was Bruce's relationship with Ra's al Ghul. And then all of a sudden, things go south. At the end of the first movie, you know, Madman wears clown makeup. He leaves this at every crime scene. And it's the fucking Joker card. Dark Knight. Arguably the best Batman movie. That's why I said arguably.
No, I mean, as much as I like Pattinson, it's not going to top.
It's going to take a fucking lot.
It's going to take a lot.
To top that movie.
And to kind of wrap around to, like, shit, I've, like, in the podcast lore about, like, my dad, like, being a ride or die Heath Ledger guy.
Right.
He finally watched Joker. And I was like, what'd you think? He was like, it was good. In his dad way. Like, it was good. And I was like, is he better than Heath? He's like, no. He was like, flat out, he's like, no. Heath is like a fucking shark. Joaquin is just like a guy you feel bad for. And then, like, he's like, he just loses his mind. But Heath is like a shark. And I'm like, you're right. You can't deny that.
Well, what was great about Heath's Joker in comparison to Joaquin's Joker? Don't get me wrong. Both movies, cinematic masterpieces. Timeless. Go back and watch them at any fucking point, and they're still great. But what's great about Heath's Joker in particular is Heath goes through so many different possible Joker lores that you don't know which one he actually is. Because DC has confirmed that there are no less than 5 Jokers in the DC universe.
I thought there were 3.
There are now 5.
Well, Jesus Christ.
But the thing is,
I'm seeing quintuple. 5 Jokers.
But the thing is that he goes through and he keeps telling different stories about the scars on his face. With his dad, with his girlfriend, you know, all sorts of different stuff. You know how I got these scars? And then he gets into the big monologues. You can't tell with him what's truth, what's fabrication, and what's in the middle.
Right.
Joaquin is very, it's very...
On his face.
On the surface. And by the end of the movie, you kind of sympathize. If not sympathize, empathize with Arthur.
Until you can't.
I don't know, man. I still kind of do at the end. Like, that dude just gets relentlessly shit on. You know, he's at his job. he gets the shit kicked out of him, and his boss is like, I don't give a shit that you got the shit kicked out of you. You fucking give me another goddamn sign, because the dude's bitching about it. His mother is a complete fucking psycho that let his fucking, let her boyfriends basically run the fucking train on Arthur. Can't go fucking, what is, werewolf, can't go werewolf. He makes up this fantasy with this relationship with Zazie Beetz in his fucking head.
Bro, I can't, to be honest, like, I can't remember watching a movie and having, like, stomach pains. Yeah. I was so, like, feeling it.
Kate, all she kept saying watching the movie, she's like, I just want to grab him and hug him.
Yeah.
You know, the part where he's in the comedy club and they finally give him his big break. And he has that fantasy scene in his head where everybody's laughing and they think he's hilarious. And then he goes up and just nobody thinks he's funny.
And she
crickets.
You could see Zazie in the audience. She wasn't even there, dude.
Yeah,
that's the fucking, like...
Well, that part, the part at the hospital where she's rubbing his back, not there.
The cafe,
she's not there. The newsstand, she's not there.
Dude, I looked at my wife, and we're both like, you gotta be fucking kidding me, dude.
And the part where she walks into her apartment, and Arthur's just sitting there, and she's just terrified. She's like, your name's Arthur, right? And, like, when that fucking part hits, just like, holy hell, he fantasized all of that. And what, God damn it, why can't I think of his name now? The guy that directed Joker.
Todd Phillips.
I kept wanting to call him Ted Phillips, but I'm like, no, that's the president of the Bears. What Todd Phillips was able to do with that movie is it became what's real and what's fiction.
Yeah.
What is Arthur truly experiencing and what is he creating in his own mind? Like, even at the end of the movie where Arthur shoots Murray in the head.
Spoilers, fuck.
Come on. Again, if you haven't seen that fucking movie by this
point, you fucking better.
I can tell you. The only thing, like, that pisses me off with that is, like, everybody, like, I've seen, like, a whole bunch of comments where they're like, this is the king of comedy. This is the king of comedy. This is the king of comedy. Okay? And if it is, they reboot movies all the fucking time. They just made it into the Joker. I've never seen The King of Comedy.
I was about to say, I've never seen that movie either. We were just talking about Scorsese shit upstairs, but I'm like, I don't think I've ever seen that one.
Yeah.
I don't know. Does it end with, like, bloodshed, too?
I mean, it's a Scorsese movie, so it's very fucking possible.
And let me hit that.
Okay, so I'm looking up The King of Comedy right now. So, Robert Pupkin is a failure in life, but a celebrity in his own mind, hosting an imaginary talk show in his mother's basement.
Automatically not the same thing.
Come on. He ends up on a talk show at the end of the movie, right?
I guess.
He attempts to book a spot on Langford's show, but is continually rebuffed.
Which is not what happens in a Joker.
Nope.
Over two, nerds.
Exhausted with rejection, Rupert hatches a kidnapping plot with the help of Masha, a former stalker obsessed with Langford. Let me see how it ends.
Bloodshed? Sexual bloodshed?
Sex?
Sex in a shed?
Yeah, I don't see him killing the guy.
Well, you don't understand it. The whole idea of him, like, fantasizing about comedy.
That's basically it.
It's like a ripoff, you know what I'm saying? Like,
Rupert responds with, tomorrow, you know I wasn't kidding and you all think I'm crazy, but I figure this way better to be the king for the night than a schmuck for a lifetime. Having known the broadcast to read at the bar, he probably submits to his arrest. Yeah, no, he doesn't fucking kill anybody. So, no. Similar. It's like when you say somebody rips off a song. There's a difference between ripping off a song and interloping a song. Interloping is legal. Ripping off or plagiarizing a song is illegal.
Ill. Capital ill.
Do you realize how long the fucking film industry has been around? you realize how many fucking stories are going to interweave with each other.